Welcome to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? How does it differ from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I interview homeschooling families across the country to unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. With us today, we have Emily from Utah, a marriage and family therapist. Emily, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure.
So we connected on Instagram. You had reached out to me with a little bit of interest coming on the show. I haven't really come at any of my guests like this before, but what made you even reach out?
I'm reaching out to a lot of podcasts. I've been on a couple recently. I think because I have a little bit more of a unique story into how I got into homeschooling than kind of a lot of your guests.
Okay.
And because I listen to the show, obviously, I love your show.
Awesome.
And love all the guests that you have. And I think I have a little bit different of approach to it all than I think a lot of folks. So I thought it'd be fun to hang out with you and get to chat and kind of talk.
Oh, so cool. All right, we'll get into it. Tell me, what is your approach?
So there's part of it, I think, that's really similar to a lot of other families where COVID was this thing that kind of blew up, you know, a lot of our perspectives or beliefs about the traditional kind of schooling, right, and what that looks like. And I come from a family of public school educators. My mom was in the public school system for 30 years. My cousin's still in it. My grandpa was in it. I came from a family of people that believed in the public education system. And really, I had a pretty good experience with the public education system growing up because the environment looked a lot different than it does today. And so, again, I think my kind of ass backwards falling into homeschool kind of did happen during the pandemic. My oldest was going to school at that time in a little, we were really lucky here in Utah in that we stayed in school and kind of got away with not having to put masks on our kids for a pretty long time. And she was in a little private school at the time. And even though the public schools had gone to masks, our little private school could avoid it for a pretty long time until they couldn't anymore. And so we pulled her around that time when they demanded it, when it was required. And really, we pulled her out and brought her home. And she was young enough, right, that she was preschool, that it didn't really matter that she wasn't in school. It was like, oh, it's fine. And we can play at home and it'll be great. But then we went to the public school in kindergarten August, September, October, for about three or four months. We gave it a try, and there was kind of two big things that made us decide that we were going to homeschool. And I am not someone that ever thought, I believed in the public education system. I was raised in the public education system. My family is still, you know, very deeply involved in that system. I never thought that I didn't want to be a homeschooling mom. I thought those ladies were nuts. I wanted to work. I wanted to, you know, I'm a therapist. I love what I do. So I never thought that I would be doing this. But two things last year really kind of made us reconsider and made us eventually end up pulling our daughter from school. And one of them was the climate. You know, like I said, the school system when I was in school looks a lot different than it does today. And even here in Utah, we're pretty protected by a lot of things, but we still have, I think sometimes Utah has even bigger headlines than some of the other places, where just crazy things happen, right? Where there's teachers that are saying, you know, we shouldn't eat meat anymore. We should be only eating bugs. Or, you know, we have all of the different flags, the many, 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 many different flags that are portrayed and displayed all over in these schools at even younger ages. So my husband and I really didn't love that. That was kind of something that we were like, oh, that's not great. That's not awesome. But then in October of last year, I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Okay.
And when I started going through treatment, so I would have chemotherapy about 3 weeks apart. And so there would be a week that my daughter would go and stay at my parents' house for about a week because I would be really sick. And then she would come home and she wouldn't go to school during those weeks, of course. And she would come home and she wouldn't want to go to school. She'd want to stay home with me. She would want to be with me because she had just missed me for a week. And I would still even be pretty sick for those 2 weeks before I would do another round. And when you get diagnosed with an illness like that, I'm 34. Oh, wow. And I was diagnosed. And when you get diagnosed with something like that, and there's a period of time kind of in the beginning from like October to December, before we knew what I was going to do, before we knew what my treatment was going to look like, where it was really scary, where we didn't know if I was going to be around for much longer or what was going to happen. Wow. And then I was really lucky. I got in a clinical trial and got some treatment, but then I got really, really sick and was hospitalized in April. And it was kind of another scary moment of what if I'm not around? And if I'm not around, do I want, you know, my 6-year-old at the time to be gone from 8:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. every single day and not be able to actually see her, spend time with her? I have my younger daughter is 2, so she's not in school yet. She's still home. But going through that experience, and you would think that I would know this because I'm a marriage and family therapist. I studied attachment theory and family bonds and all of the things, but we're kind of fed this belief, right, that you need to go to public school, then you need to go to college, then you need to get a 9-to-5 job, and you need to pay taxes until you die. And even though I went to school to study attachment theory and how important that is to our kids, I forgot it. I was like, yeah, she needs to go to preschool. She needs to go to kindergarten. Like, she needs to know her times tables and the quadratic formula by the time she's 5. You know, like, she needs to know all these things. And so cancer really helped me remember that none of that shit matters. It's not important. The most important thing is connecting to her, is her ability to connect with me, my ability to keep her safe, and that connection that we have, because she has her whole life that she's going to leave me, right? Childhood is such a short period of time. If and when we're lucky, we get like 18-ish years, but that's it. That's all we get. And then they don't live with us anymore. Most of the time, sometimes things happen, but childhood is such a short period of time. There was this moment where I woke up and was like, what is the freaking rush? Why am I in such a hurry to force them to grow up?
Oh, that is so true.
So I think, you know, that was a huge reason why I kind of reached out to you, is because I'm really like, the less is more. You know, I love Ginny. What's her last name? Yurick, the 1,000 hours outside. Mm-hmm. I love her. I love her approach of like, just get them outside. Let them go play. They don't need all of this stuff that, you know, that we try to give them in order to give them a good childhood. They just need us. That's it.
Oh, you are so right. So first and foremost, how is your health now?
Much better now. It's funny because I actually was cancer free in February of this year, but I had some side effects from, I did an interesting kind of chemotherapy, then immunotherapy immediately after, kind of combination for this clinical trial. And my body just didn't end up responding very well. I got very, very, very sick for a few months. And I actually ended up, because that's a whole nother, you know, a whole nother podcast for another day of, you know, the medical system kind of failed me. And I ended up leaving and going to Germany for 2 weeks to get treatment. Wow. And it saved my life. I would definitely not be here if I had not abandoned the medical system here. They would have let me stay on high dose steroids until I probably died.
I mean, you've given me chills a couple times in your talking. And I really thank you for sharing this story. And it's something I think about often. In fact, yesterday we were at a financial advisor's to see, you know, can we make this work on one salary, and what would, are we okay for retirement? And, you know, they said, do you have life insurance? And I'm like, well, what do we need that for if my husband died, he's got a 401k, I would get that. And they're like, yeah, but that doesn't equal a salary every year. You need to think about, you know, and I said to him, well, if I'm going to put $100 away to a life insurance policy that in 20 years, if we're still alive, all that money just poof, it, you know, it's not ours anymore. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't I take that money and put it into a savings account and earn some interest and then still have it at the end of the 20 years? And I'm like, but that's never going to cover his salary if he's gone and you're not working because you're homeschooling the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking of it in relation to like, I would have to go back to work, but if you have some sort of life insurance policy, I could continue getting like an $80,000 a year or whatever you set up the policy for to take you to that time that you would need the 401k, you know, in retirement age. So I had never thought about it like that, but I do think about that often. And, you know, if I homeschool the kids and I died, my husband couldn't necessarily quit his job to homeschool the kids. Like, who would do that? But when you think of a life insurance on me, okay, well, maybe now we could take out money to pay someone to, you know, home educate them privately. But, you know, and I think about that because of like, well, then they'd have to go into the public school system. And if I don't teach them all the things that they need to know by these ages, they're going to walk into it and be like, oh God, my mom's gone. And I don't know the times, tables, and quadratic equations. So,
right.
But, you know, that's the reality of it, unfortunately. And I'm so glad that you're doing okay. And, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking too of like, I don't know if you ever heard of Ty and Charlene Bollinger with The Truth About Cancer. And I had purchased their docuseries. Mm-hmm. So I can always send that to you too. Just the information, even if you go the traditional route of the chemo and radiation, other things you can cut out of your diet, which we should be doing anyway with cancer or not, but the things that just feed the cancer. And it's so overwhelming with everything. Like there is cancer coming at us from just so many different aspects, you know, but by what we breathe, what we eat, what we are injected with, what we consume, what we wear. I mean, it's impossible to not have any of these toxins. And then if it's hereditary as well, it's like just can be so overwhelming. So that's a conversation probably for later in the show, is how you're approaching like that sort of stuff with your kids, because you obviously want to lessen their chances from ever having this and you having it again. But how are your kids doing with the transition of like your illness and now kind of getting back into the rhythm? Are they enjoying the homeschool, or if it's even considered homeschool, if it's more of an unschool approach?
Right. Yeah, I think I definitely fall into the unschooling approach. You know, we value, there's a saying, I can't remember who came up with it, but she said connection over curriculum. And that is definitely our philosophy, our model of like connection first, no matter what, all the time. She is so young. I think we forget that, right? We think like, oh, my kid, you know, my child is 8, so they should have ABC, or my child is 10, so they should have it, you know, ABC done. And it's like, they're 8, or they're babies on this planet. They're so little, they're so young, and they can't sit in a desk or even, you know, sitting at a table and do workbooks and study for 8 hours a day. That's just definitely, I don't think that's meaningful or powerful for their, you know, development, for their natural stages of development as children. So we definitely are doing more of an unschooling kind of approach, you know, really valuing that connection over curriculum, and really just teaching her what she's interested in knowing. Right. And maybe there's kind of this unschooling, you know, spectrum. Mm-hmm. Right. And you have like people on this edge of the spectrum that are like, it's just free for all. And like, we do whatever. And, you know, there's not any sort of anything. And I think we kind of fall somewhere in the middle. Like there's still organized structure to their day. You know, we still have bedtime. We still get up and have breakfast at usually, you know, 8 or 9 o'clock. And then we usually do something educational-ish in the morning. And then we play in the afternoon. Pretty often is kind of like a loose structure.
I just ordered my copy of A Connected Christmas from Treehouse Schoolhouse. Lindsay, the creator of Treehouse Schoolhouse, who I interviewed in episode 21, writes, I have always wanted the Christmas season to be beautiful and nostalgic for my children. My desire for this season is to mark their hearts with traditions and give them warm memories of togetherness in our home. Most of all, I want the Advent season to draw them to their Savior. Out of these desires, A Connected Christmas was born. I mean, come on! Who doesn't want that for their kids? How nice does that sound? So what is included in A Connected Christmas? Well, it comes with a 42-page teacher's guide with weekly grids, daily lesson plans, recipes, and handcraft instructions. I'm pretty sure handcraft is just fancy for arts and crafts. And then it comes with a set of student sheets with scripture, artwork, poetry, and hymn display sheets for copywork. And then you also get a narration notebook. Now you can get this with a digital download or you can purchase the hard copy. And really, it's just a 3-week Advent study designed for the whole family. So whether you make this part of your morning routine or something that you guys do after dinner, it is such a beautiful way to bring these warm memories to the Christmas season for you and your family. A Connected Christmas is an invitation to gather your family and celebrate beauty and delight through festive carols, stories, poetry, art, baking, and handcrafts. It's about family and it's about Jesus. It's about connecting hearts to the heart of Christmas. To purchase your copy, just go to treehouseschoolhouse.com/thehomeschoolhowtopodcast and use the Homeschool How To Podcast to get 10% off your entire order. Or you can go to the show's description and click on the link there using promo code thehomeschoolhowtopodcast. I really hope you enjoy. Thank you for listening.
We're very fortunate in that Utah, there is an absurd amount of homeschooling families in this state, families that have been doing it for, you know, 30, 50 years. And then, you know, families that they're like, this is my first year too. I don't know what I'm doing. Even in my, we live kind of at the top of a hill in a neighborhood of probably about 100 families. And it's one road into our neighborhood of 100 families that you can get in and out. And there's maybe 20 families in my neighborhood alone that does homeschooling.
That is so cool. So when we talk about having that community, you know, you guys have like endless possibilities for the parents that want it to, hey, can you take the kids maybe every other Monday so I get a little break and I'll take them the opposite Mondays so that, you know, that's really cool. I love that. Now, what I struggle with the unschooling approach is my insecurities as a homeschooling parent, because when they're around their cousins that are older and who are all public schooled, or even, you know, friends that go to school, or just like you said, your family is teachers, your family and friends are full of teachers. So they know what kids are learning in the school system by every age. And when you're not meeting those milestones, because, you know, learning ABCs at 3 and 4 is a little silly. Now that my son is 5 and it's like still hard for him to remember every letter and the sound they make and then extra sounds that they sometimes make. It's a huge concept at that age when they have no real desire to read a book on their own, because reading is time next to mommy and reading is time next to daddy. So they don't want to do that on their own. They like, you know, getting that bonding time. So when they're a little bit older and, you know, maybe it's they want to read directions to how to put a toy together or something like that, they might have a little bit more of a concept to it and it's going to come easier. But it's our insecurities that I'm not doing my job as homeschooling mom because my kid doesn't know how to read by 6. How do you navigate that?
I think, so one of my favorite quote unquote parenting books, is How to Hold On to Your Kids by Gordon Neufeld, and Gabor Mate is kind of a co-author, because in that book, it really reminds us or tells us that my fear and insecurity about my child is mine. It's not theirs. And I think sometimes the mistake we make is I put that on them. Right? Like, oh, you need to remember the ABCs. They're like, oh, you need to be reading or you need to know your times tables right now. That's mine. That's my fear or anxiety. And I mean, I am with you 1,000% because, you know, my family, who is all very much in the public education system, there is, four, five, and then my other one, six. There are six children that are all just, we're in like a 7-year age gap. And they are all in public school and my children are not. And so that fear and anxiety of like, are my kids quote unquote behind? Are they not doing as well? Are they, you know, all of the things? I have those 1000%. And I, you know, often will cry to my husband of what if we're making the wrong choice? Or what if she's not smart? What if, you know, what happens? And he does a really good job of reminding me that, you know, she's a baby and it's okay. She is 6 years old. It is going to be okay. But I think it's that reminder that those fears are mine. Those anxieties are mine. They don't belong to my child. And when I put them on them, they feel it too. And then they're like, oh, I don't, you know, why is this a big deal to mom? Why is it, this feels like it's, you know, stressing mom out. And then they get stressed out. And it's like, you're six, you're five, you're whatever age. You don't need to be stressing out about this because it does come. It will come. And if I'm worried about it, I'm lucky in that my daughter loves to read. She will read independently for hours. She will read to her baby sister for hours. She will read to us. She very early on latched on to, if I can read, I can know the world. Mm. You know, I can learn. And we kind of told her that. My mom was, you know, an English teacher for a long time before she got into administration. And so both my husband and I read a lot. So I think she just sees, you know, we have a room of books in our basement because mom loves books and I read books all the time and dad loves books and read books all the time. So I think that's just something that she picked up from a really early age and is really pretty, pretty good at. Now, if she was not reading, if, you know, she was struggling, I definitely would have more of like, I think we need to work on this, or I would have more fears. And I would want to support her in that. I would want to spend more time and energy, whatever that looks like, you know, working on, you know, phonics, because we do kind of follow more the phonics versus sight words approach when it comes to reading. And I think we think that, you know, it has to be, we need to be like looking at this phonics book, or we need to be watching this video, or we need to be studying phonics in this certain way. You know, instead it's let's go to, you know, the grocery store or the mall or the whatever, and let's go let her read things she wants to read, like the instructions on her new Lego thing, or, you know, the type of Barbie doll that's on the shelf or whatever, and teaching her, you know, what those things sound like and look like so that she can know the world. And I think that really kind of helped motivate her.
Yes. Having the motivation is definitely key.
But the fear and anxiety is real.
And I didn't even know what phonics was. We've been doing it now for 4 months. So with just this Hagerty phonics book that they actually use in schools. So now I'm like understanding the breakup of the words, which I don't think I ever got that in my public school education. I mean, I have no idea how I learned how to read. I mean, some teacher must have taught me. I don't remember my mother ever reading to me. My mother did like to read books. I remember her reading, but I don't remember us. But then again, I was thinking about this as you were talking about the bonding. I don't really have a strong bond with my mother. Mm-hmm. There's many reasons for that. But I want to change things for my kids. I am noticing my son has some of the same pushback to me that I have to my mother. And maybe I'm just bringing this up with you because of you're a therapist, or because of, you know, the bond that you were talking about before, as far as being more important than the education. And I know that I want to work on fixing the connection, because I can see this sort of like hostility, resentment that he has towards me. Sometimes I'm like, it's because I didn't nurse him. I didn't have the proper support, and kind of like just failed with that for him. And he went to daycare where I have a 15-month-old now, and she still nurses, and I'm home with them. And, you know, so I'm like, did I do something wrong? But then again, does he even remember that? I don't know. It's funny that, I don't know, I guess there's so many different avenues and approaches, but I really think no matter what happened, I could fix it now with how we're educating mm-hmm. and not worry so much about the learning part, but more about just exposing and then making the connection. Like, maybe if nothing else, all we did was read like four library books or four books that we've read 100 times, sit and read them again and, mm-hmm. you know, color together. That would probably is what I'm taking away from this conversation is what I should be doing.
Mm. And even, you know, and you say like, oh, if we only read, you know, four library books, you read four library True. Books. Yeah. Like, that's amazing. You know, being able to, there's no study or research out there that says kids need to be in school for 8 hours a day in order to be successful. And there's actually, and I don't know it as well, I'm kind of learning it, and, you know, I'm listening, you have a lot of really good guests on your podcast that know, you know, a lot more than I do, but you hear all these things of like, you know, they can learn up to eighth grade math in like 2 hours, you know, that it's not that complicated. Right. There's not that much. They don't have to be, you know, studying in class for 8 hours a day. And I'm kind of reminded of that when I, you know, last year when she was in school, for those few months before we just kind of, you know, kept her at home, you know, it would always be, you know, hey, Addie Rose, how was school? Or what did you do today? And it was like, well, we went to the library for a while. So I'm like, okay, that's good. Right. And then we played on the tablets for however long. And schools, I don't know if it's this way, you know, out where you are, but here, schools are proud of the fact that every single child has an iPad
really?
Or has a Chromebook or, you know, whatever those things are. They're like, every kid in the school has an iPad. And I'm like, I don't want my child to have an iPad, certainly not in yeah. the school system. I don't wow. want her to be, why am I paying an absurd amount of taxes toward, most of my taxes go towards public education mm-hmm. for you guys to put my child on an iPad all day.
Right.
That's not, so that was another kind of trigger to me of when I ask her what she's doing, they're doing a lot of crafts, which is fine. She's young, you know, they're going to the library and they're on their tablet for, you know, centers for 2 hours. And I'm thinking, I can do it way better than that.
And that was preschool.
I can go to the library. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was preschool. That was kindergarten. And really all of the elementary schools, they're pretty proud of that wow. fact of everybody has a Chromebook or an iPad or whatever their, you know, their things are. And it's like, that's not how kids learn. We're going to have so many problems with attention span and things like that after these experiences.
Yes. And I've talked about it on the podcast before, how like I was just looking at screen time being bad as like you're sedentary. So you're not running around, you know, that's where you should be outside getting fresh air, whatever. But there's so much, that's like one little layer of it, because then when you look into what they're getting exposed to, and even on these educational apps, there are lots of hidden agendas, and all it takes is mm-hmm. someone with that mission to pay somebody that owns the app, and there you go. They get an ad in it. That's all it takes. But then mm-hmm. there's another layer of the amount of the screen changes that your kids see, or even adults see, in the matter of, say, a minute, right? They might see mm-hmm. 1,000, I'm just throwing out any number, 1,000 screen changes, okay. Whereas when we were younger – playing video games, I played like Duck Hunt or Super Mario uh-huh. Brothers, or watched Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. The screens were not changing as quickly as they do now. You might not even realize that the screen is changing, but your brain does. And it might change, right. you know, 1,000 or 1,000,000 times in a minute. So you're, especially as they're growing up, their synapses are making these connections now that this is how high, fast paced things should be. So that when they are looking at a book or a chalkboard or just being outside and the screen is not changing, their environment is not changing that many times, they actually get anxiety. Mm-hmm. So that was like a huge eye-opener for me on why screens are – now, I'm still guilty of putting my kids in front of screens, mm-hmm. but not – it's definitely something I'm conscious of and what they're doing, where mm-hmm. if I can play an audiobook or a podcast for them – so they don't have to look at the screen. They can just listen and then still have that sort of imagination going on. I'll try to do that. Mm-hmm. The little one is hard because she's a monster, but
yeah,
but it's hard, but it's so important because it's so different from when we were growing up. And the same thing with schools. Like, yeah. I don't know what goes on in a school, and I really should take more time investigating with my nieces and nephews, because we had like those big old computers. Right. Like, if you had computer class, it was on a Big Mac computer with a mainframe and a black screen with just the little green dots and the green.
Took 10 minutes to connect to the internet to dial up to
yes.
it.
If there even was internet. Right. I don't think there was in my high school. Mm-hmm. But to now having little kids on an iPad, like, I didn't even realize that little yeah. kids were on devices. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And it's scary. Like I said, you know, there's another great book, Glow Kids, by Nicholas Cardenas, that talks about sort of the impact of screens, you know, and our kids. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It's kind of creates these little hits of dopamine all throughout this experience. And then living in the real world and having a real job or going outside and playing in the dirt or at a playground, they're not getting those same levels of dopamine. And then now their dopamine right. is lower than kind of your average person. And then we're setting them up for depression and anxiety later in life, you know, because they just have yes. this instant thing all the time. And we're not, the way that humans are living now, even for the last, you know, 100 years, is not the way that humans lived for the previous thousands and thousands of years. There's been so much rapid change. We're not designed as human beings to live this way, to have the internet in our hand, you know, to have all of these microplastics and all these artificial foods and all of this crap. We are not designed to live this way.
Hi, everyone. Thank you again for listening to this week's episode. I wanted to reach out and give you a discount code for the Tuttle Twins. The Tuttle Twins help children develop critical thinking skills about real-world concepts, sharing ideas with kids that most adults don't even know, let's be honest. The Tuttle Twins books recognize that the world is full of companies, people, and politicians who want to expose your children to ideas that you do not support. I read them with my kids. My 5-year-old at least can understand. The 1-year-old, she's almost there. But they provoke some really great conversations, things that I wouldn't necessarily think to talk to him about. And they present these concepts in a way that kids can actually understand, and it makes sense. So please check out thehomeschoolhowto.com, and under listener discounts, you can find the Tuttle Twins and use code Cheryl40 for 40% off all products for kids ages 5 through 11. That's CHERYL40. Now, you do have to use my link and code to get the discount, and so that they know I sent you, which would be greatly appreciated. Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your listening.
And that is why we are seeing such an incredible, you know, increase in kids with mental health diagnoses, you know, even adults with that are really, really struggling with mental health. And yeah, some of that is definitely post-pandemic. But a lot of that too is, what food are you fueling your body? How much are you scrolling the internet? What kinds of things are you looking at on the internet? You know, what does your air quality look like? What kind of water are you drinking? Like, all of the things that 100 years ago, it didn't, you know, pesticides weren't in our food that long ago. You know, we didn't have Red 40 and we didn't have all of this other stuff that now is just poisoning our, you know, our families. It's hard. It's a challenge to be able to, because yeah, I'm with you. Both of my kids, you know, use the iPad or do watch TV. We still have screen time. Yeah, we definitely do. And we limit it. And, you know, we're really, you know, mindful of the games they're playing and all of the things. But it's challenging to be able to find this balance of, okay, it's 2023 and this is a part of life. And I don't want them, you know, to graduate high school and be like, I've never touched an iPad, and then, you know, go nuts. But I want to be really mindful of, their little brains are not designed to handle and manage this kind of dopamine surge all day long. And so just being really mindful, you know, and figuring out what works for you and what works for your family, I think is really, really important.
And that's a huge aspect of it too, the dopamine surge, mm-hmm. because it's a false dopamine surge with the changing of the screens and the like, oh, you have this many notifications from mm-hmm. you know, Facebook or Instagram or whatever the kids are using these days. It's a very false sense of dopamine, whereas playing in the dirt or doing something fun outside, doing something, you know, cuddling with mom, that mm-hmm. is also a dopamine hit, but it's a more gradual up and a gradual down. Whereas the one that comes from the screens or the social media is you see the notification that's like, you got 64 likes, and then it immediately mm-hmm. falls flat because mm-hmm. it's like, oh, but I didn't get any comments. Or, right. you know, like it's just a quick up and a quick down, very much like alcohol. It's the same. And I'm guilty of drinking alcohol too, but you know what I mean? It's you do have to look at the reality of that it yeah. is a very false sense and actually changes your equilibrium that, okay, mm-hmm. well, I'm always supposed to be at this level now. And then you're mm-hmm. not comfortable at your homeostasis. Right. Yeah. It's crazy. And there's a really good episode of The High Wire called The Mighty Moms, or just Mighty Moms. And it was released the week of, I want to say like November 16th. So you can go to thehighwire.com to check that one out. And they are talking about, first of all, this is the best I've ever heard this described. And it makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. So we have the pesticides like you were talking about, or the herbicides, right? Stuff to dry out the herbs so that we can like they spray this on the crops so that you can dry out the wheat, dry out the corn so that you can harvest it mm-hmm. quicker to go ahead and make more. So we have the herbicides that we're spraying all over with glyphosate, which causes cancer and everything else. They're spraying that, but then they're right. also genetically modifying our crops. So the wheat and the corn, they're genetically modifying it before they plant it so that it doesn't die when the glyphosate is sprayed mm-hmm. on it. Glyphosate meaning like things like Roundup. Okay, so this is now two layers of mm-hmm. food that we're consuming, and cancer rates are up too. And that's in children and adults. And you have to look at, okay, well, if we're spraying glyphosate so that it dries out our crops, but so that it doesn't kill the crops, like it kills all the weeds and everything else, we are going to genetically modify the seeds and the grain so that that stays alive when we spray the poison mm-hmm. on top of it. I mean, it is insane. And, you know, so now I'm like, all right, I guess we do have to start eating organic. I thought just maybe not getting all the vaccines was enough, but it's like, no, now we have to really look at. So this episode also went into this episode of Mighty Moms on the High Wire. There is a group of, I want to say it's Moms Across America. I should have been more prepared, but they went into schools and they were testing the school lunches to see what sort of contaminants mm-hmm. were in the food that schools are serving. And many schools are wow. now actually offering fast food, like a McDonald's at the school lunch. And some of the schools were offering Panera. Panera was actually the worst wow. because of the breading, I guess. Mm-hmm. Panera had the most toxins and metals and wow. all that in it. Even In-N-Out, I guess that's something, maybe you guys have it out west. That's supposed to be a healthier option for takeout food, mm-hmm. for fast food. That was really bad too. Mm-hmm. And it's just crazy that so, you know, you send your kids to school thinking that, you know, Michelle Obama fixed the school right. lunches. And no, she didn't.
No.
It's terrible. So they're getting all this all day. Oh, and the last part is when they tested the fruits and vegetables, they had the most toxins in them.
The highest. Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you are, because I've been down even pre-cancer, my husband and I really started going down the rabbit hole of, you know, natural and holistic living and, you know, removing things from our diet and all kind of before our first daughter was born. You know, we were kind of like, okay, we want to pay closer attention to this. But so we've been doing it for a long time. So I'm really, really crazy, right? I have like air purifiers in my home. We have a whole hot, you know, whole house water filtration system. We only eat organically. So we've been doing this for a long time. So we've been coming, you know, we've had a long time to really focus on this. But for, you know, families, if maybe somebody's listening to this and they're like, oh my gosh, you know, this is overwhelming. I don't even know where to start. And it's all very expensive. And what do I even do? How do I reduce my risk? prioritize organic with fruits and vegetables, 1,000%, right? Because, yeah, I can't, you can't overnight go and replace all of your fabrics, you know, with cotton and wool and, you know, things that are natural fabrics. Because I guarantee everything, most things in most people's homes are polyester, which is plastic, or rayon, really? Which is also plastic.
What else but is it's, polyester?
Yes.
And what?
Rayon. Rayon, polyester, most of the fabrics, acrylic, those are plastic, right?
Wow.
And yeah, if you look at the labels on your clothing, they'll mostly probably be those. But most people, myself included, I can't afford to buy a whole new wardrobe and buy all new, you know, bedding and linens. That's ridiculous. It's way too overwhelming. So you start small. And you do what you can. You know, food is one of those things that you're replacing all the time, right? I go grocery shopping every single week. And so starting to really prioritize organic fruits and vegetables for sure, because, yeah, fruits and vegetables are the ones that are usually in the dirt that absorb the most pesticides when it comes to growing and things like that. So if you're buying organic fruits and vegetables, you're guaranteeing that you have significantly less. It doesn't mean no pesticides. It means different kinds and less toxic, but prioritizing that. And even when you're at the grocery store and you're buying food, look at the ingredients list. And if it's a number, if it's a color, it's not a food.
Oh, wow. That's a good way to look at that.
If I don't know what it is, why would I put it in my body? You know, red 40 and all of these crazy things. If it's not something that is a food, I'm not putting it in my body. Even things, you know, like all of the seed oils and things like that. Like, again, I could go down a whole rabbit hole and talk to you for 2 hours about all of these things. But I think the most important thing that I've found that the takeaway is that, because you can fall down this rabbit hole of the toxins that are in our world and really get overwhelmed and really get scared. And I've had moments of that, you know, after I got diagnosed with cancer, I really fell down the rabbit hole again of like, we're going to burn our house down and like rebuild a new house that's not as toxic. And you just can't, you know, fear is far more toxic than anything else in our world or environment. And so just being able to do what you can, prioritize your food over everything else. If you're looking at the ingredients list and you don't know what it is, don't put it in your body. That one's a pretty simple. And then you can kind of make, you know, small changes and do things over time. But food is by far the most important, I think.
Yeah. And very hard just because it's expensive, like you said. And we just live in this world of, all right, get up and go. So you'd get that granola bar or take out food, you know, you go out to eat or something. So it is super hard. Now, so do you sometimes ask yourself, like, all right, you were already doing the organic stuff and you're not the first person that I've heard of that was doing the organic stuff and still got cancer. Like, are you like, how did this even happen? Because our body does regenerate itself, or skin and, you know, things like that. How does it even happen to someone who was already doing some sort of holistic lifestyle?
I mean, kind of two things, right? So yes, the cancer that I had pretty extensive genetic testing. I have no genetic predisposition or markers of any kind to receive cancer. Anybody on my side of the family, no one has cancer. This is a complete unknown for our families. And yes, I think for the past year, I've been really crazy. And the past 5 years, you know, things have been important to me and things like that. But really, I didn't take very good care of my body in my younger years. You know, a lot of alcohol, some drug use, you know, I smoked cigarettes for a long time. I didn't take very good care of my body. And so maybe that was the contributing factor to, you know, the cancer that I got. Maybe the fact that, you know, I grew up next to an alfalfa farm where they sprayed pesticides once a week. Maybe that contributed to it. There's so many things, right? There's so many different things that could have contributed to the fact that I got cancer. But something that was really enlightening for me when we went to Germany and I received treatment there, they did this blood test that essentially, and it's not available in the United States. It's only this lab in Germany that does it. And there's kind of different ways you can piece it together here too, but not as comprehensively. But when they first ran this lab test, it essentially tells you the toxic load that your body is under. And what your body kind of currently has in
it.
So when they ran this test for me, I had insanely high levels of heavy metals. Why? I don't know. I could probably point to like four or five different things that maybe contributed to that. I still did have pretty high levels of pesticides in my blood. I had formaldehyde. There was all kinds of different things that were that my liver was trying desperately to filter through. And that is another thing that the test showed was my liver really struggled. My liver struggles to eliminate toxins from my body. So for someone like me, and this is kind of what my doctor in Germany said, you know, is that, hey, it's for you where your liver is. And we have no idea why your liver struggles. It could be genetic. It could be a million different things. But what we do know is that your liver really struggles to eliminate toxins from your body. So it's vitally important that you don't put a ton of toxins into your body because your body's going to struggle. And then maybe that's kind of how the cancer developed. Whereas we're going to have my husband, you know, get the same test done because we have a doctor here in Utah that can ship it to Germany and kind of do all the things. Wow. But we're going to have him get it done to see what his results are because maybe, you know, or even my brother who grew up in the same place as me with pesticides and, you know, all the things, he doesn't and hopefully never has cancer because maybe his liver is a rock star and his liver is really good at getting, filtering out all of this stuff. So he should still be careful, but he maybe doesn't have to be quite as intense as I am because I know my liver doesn't do a super good job at eliminating these things. So if I want to reduce my risk of cancer developing again or later in life, I need to make sure that I take really, really good care of my liver, of my body, so that it can filter out these things effectively.
Hey folks, me again real quick. I just wanted to let you know that I do have a t-shirt and sweatshirt for sale now on my website. Be the role model your government fears, the Homeschool How To podcast. If you'd like to get yours, you can head on over to my website, thehomeschoolhowto.com. And under shop, you can find t-shirts, hoodies, and that's about it so far. I would love your support. And if you share an episode or my podcast on social media, tag me in it or send me a screenshot and I will put you in the running for a free sweatshirt all of your own. The drawing to be mid-December. Thank you for your support. Have a great day.
So when I went to Germany in May, they ran this test and then they just ran it. My doctor who was in St. George, who's just south of us, ran it again. And it, because I've been on this insane regimen and I got all this treatment in Germany. And so I've really been supporting my body as best of my ability to make sure that I'm really healthy. And we repeated this blood test and the toxic load on my body is way less, way less. Heavy metals take quite a period of time. I think he said maybe 5 years. For your body to filter those out. So it can take some time for those to get out. But a lot of the toxic load of my body had gone way, way, way down when we were able to repeat this test.
And what were the things that you changed? Because you were already holistic before. What were some things from the first test to the next test?
Well, the treatment for sure.
The chemo that you were getting in America?
Well, so I got the chemo here in the States, right? But that most definitely, the chemo doesn't know cancer cells from healthy cells. So chemotherapy just goes in and destroys it all, right? Wipes it all. And that's kind of what happened is I went through this chemotherapy and then my body, normally your body should be able to repair and recover after receiving an aggressive treatment like chemotherapy. My body couldn't. My body was not bouncing back. It was not returning to a healthy state. It was really, really struggling. And so I did find this doctor in Germany and he does a lot of different kinds of treatments. But the two things that were kind of the most important for me while I was out there was one, he does IV treatments every day for 2 weeks that were specifically targeted to repair my body at a cellular level. So going into the cell, and he's a doctor, he's way smarter. He would explain this way better. But it's repairing your body at a cellular level. So I got daily IVs of vitamins and minerals and all kinds of different things to help my body repair. And then the other treatment that I received, that this one is kind of crazy, and this one was the biggest reason why we went to Germany, is because it's actually illegal here in the United States. You can't get it done. And that's what's called FMT. It's fecal microbial transplant. So it's basically what they do is they take a healthy stool sample from someone, and then they put it into my body. And they did that, if I remember right, I think I got 6 treatments. But that essentially rebuilds your gut microbiome, because everybody's talking about, you know, gut microbiome and how important that is and da, da, da. And mine, chemotherapy wiped that. You know, I had no healthy bacteria in my gut. My body couldn't absorb nutrients. It couldn't absorb anything. And so the FMT was rebuilding kind of my gut microbiome and getting back into a healthy place. And so those were a huge thing, I think, that helped. And then, yeah, like I said, we're even more crazy or strict, you know, than we were before. We have, you know, replaced most of the fabrics in our home so that we don't have a ton of polyester or rayon or acrylic or kind of these fake, you know, things. We have a lot of organic bamboo and cotton and just natural fibers that aren't sprayed to death with toxins, essentially, or that aren't plastic.
Well, so first of all, I have heard of the fecal matter thing that you were talking about. I can't remember if it was on The High Wire or The Truth About Cancer, but I have heard of it. And they were also saying the results are like amazing, but they won't allow it in the States.
Yeah.
And especially right. The vitamin and mineral one, they're not going to do that. That doesn't make them any money. But things like the polyester, I would never have thought, like, and ironically, a week ago, I was on a group text with a bunch of moms, and they're like, what soap should we use that's clean for our babies? And I'm like, guys, soap washes off. Let's worry about what we're like putting in their body and stuff like that. But now that you're saying even just wearing, like, I've never thought about stuff being sprayed on the clothes, and or even like laundry detergent. I'll get Free and Clear, but it's like, I think it's still Tide, which doesn't, I mean, Free and Clear of what? They're probably like Free and Clear of formaldehyde, but you know, you got to look, take that next step and see Free and Clear of what. But it's so crazy. And it made me think of things like plastic containers that we put our food in, you know, like that's so common.
And then you put it in the microwave and heat it up.
Yeah. I mean, I stopped doing that, but yes, I mean, you can buy the vegetables that they tell you are just as safe, buy frozen vegetables, keep it in the steam bag and put it right in the microwave. And I did stop doing that, but we did that for a while. And, you know, and now I'm like, okay, cut up the vegetable and put it in a pan. But then you have the seed oil thing. And like that, like you said, it's so overwhelming. We just have to take a step back and do little bits at a time. And even if it's not every article of clothing or every container that we put food in, if it's some, it just lessens the load. Like, you're going to get toxins in your life. You are going to. And that's okay.
Yeah. Because
you don't want your kid, your kid's body, if they never experience any toxins, and this is just me, I imagine, they never get a single toxin in it, and their body doesn't know how to work it out. It, when they do go out, whatever they choose to do and at 20, 30 years old, that might be an overload on their body at that time. And, you know, so like, it's, you don't get overwhelmed, like trying to eliminate everything. I think we do have to train our bodies for this sort of thing, but train it in a way that's digestible to the body. And I mean, learning about that test, that's amazing. So that's also something cool to look into. You don't know what the name was, right?
It's called the IGL, and it's in a lab in Germany. Okay. You can order it if you have a provider here that will order it. You can. It's just, it's pretty expensive. And then it does, you know, you're overnighting blood to Germany. And so it's fairly expensive to get it done here, unfortunately. But there are some different tests if you do find a naturopath. Or, you know, a functional medicine provider, they have some other tests you know, that are important that maybe you can get your insurance to pay for, right? Things, easy, simple things like, hey, what are your vitamin D levels at? You know, I'm a therapist. So my day job, I don't work that much. I work like 10 hours a week, but with my clients that are experiencing depression or anxiety or significant mood shifts or swings or things like that, we look at these things. You know, the first thing that I tell them is go to your GP, go to your regular doctor and order these tests. You know, I have kind of a little list. Go get these done and see what happens. And most people are deficient in vitamin D. And fixing your vitamin D is easy. You do a blood test. If it says, hey, you're low in vitamin D, supplement vitamin D. They're pretty affordable. You can get them at Costco or, you know, wherever. Don't order your supplements from Amazon, but you can get, you know, your, you can get some vitamin D, and just getting your vitamin D levels to a healthy level, you'll find, you know, significantly improves your overall mood and well-being and how you feel. Or so, you know, it's this idea of testing, not guessing, right? Not just taking these supplements because maybe they'll help or maybe they'll do something. GPs, right? Your regular provider can run these tests. You do just kind of have to know what to ask, you know, get your vitamin D levels checked, get your cortisol checked. If you're a female, get your, what's it called? HSA and, you know, all of your female hormones checked and see where they're at. And remember that functional is not optimal, right? So even if your provider is like, yeah, you're within the functional level, I mean, the functional level of sick people, right? So we want to be in the optimal range. We want to be in the optimal level. And so, you know, those kinds of things can significantly improve your mental health and your overall well-being. And then easy things, because that is probably the thing that I hear the most often, right? Is, oh my gosh, it's expensive. And yeah, it oftentimes buying organically and buying the quote unquote healthy product, you know, buying my kids the Cascadian Farms Cheerios that are just like wheat and honey. For some reason, those are like $5 a box and Cheerios are like $2 a box. And Cheerios have 50 ingredients
and you get less in the list. In it, right?
Yeah, it's a smaller dang box. Uh-huh. So why it is that way, I don't know.
Yeah, my husband will get Magic Spoon cereal. And it's like, my son will be like, I don't want to finish my bowl. I'm like, you're finishing that. It's like $10 for that bowl of cereal.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So it is, you know, it is expensive. It's about prioritizing the things, you know, that are important to you, that are meaningful for you. But, you know, for those families that are maybe, if they're noticing mental health stuff in their kiddos, if they're noticing, you know, ADHD stuff, because that is just, you know, skyrocketing right now. If you're noticing stuff in your kids, yeah, get a blood test and see where things are at to see, you know, how they are. Because that's pretty non-invasive. Yeah, kids don't love to be, you know, poked, but it's a pretty small, minimal thing to see where things are at and if their vitamin D is low or if different things are going on in their body. And then try some tiny little things that could probably significantly improve, you know, their overall well-being, like sun exposure, get outside, you know, grounding, get your feet in the dirt. You know, we live in a concrete jungle. Take your shoes off and touch the earth with your feet. If you ever notice, and I was traveling recently, so I think I really noticed this. My husband and I went to Texas for a few days, and I noticed I did not touch the earth for 4 days, right? Because I'm going from my home to the airport, to the airplane, to the hotel, to this. We went for a wedding, to the venue. I take my shoes off, but it's in the hotel room, right? And that's carpet or whatever. It's not the earth, right? Get your body, get your feet to touch the earth. The earth helps our nervous system ground and regulate. So getting exposure or touching the earth every day and see how much that impacts your kids' mental health to be able to just ground, this idea of grounding.
Yes, and I've heard of that too. It's a little harder in upstate New York during like December, March time, but it is so important. And I'll fight with myself because, you know, we'll try to let the chickens out and then they got chicken poop everywhere. And then you have these like I don't know what's true and not, like, you know, when I research into like these, tetanus came from, you know, the stool of an animal. So I'm like, put your shoes on before you walk outside. But the reality of it is probably much more in depth than like, you know, a little kid just walked through some poop. Like there's probably needs to be like a cut on their foot or something like that. And like, it's not like chicken poops everywhere. They could walk in the grass. I mean,
right.
You know, it, but we are so bombarded with fear and our lives too, that it's like, nope, just put on your shoes so you don't cut your foot, so you don't step in dog poop. But it's like, well, what's the worst that's going to happen? Give them a shower at the end of the day or whatever, right. Clean up the cut, clean up their foot. It is good for us. And that's really important, especially as adults. We always put shoes on before we go outside.
Yeah. Be barefoot more, right? Get even that, the first, you know, light of the day, getting sun exposure. Yeah. Even in the winter, and I know it's hard, but kids are so, they don't know what we know, right? Even yesterday, because we have chickens too, and the chickens are essentially my daughter's, you know, pets. They're like puppies. They hold them and snuggle them and play with them and do all kinds of things. So yesterday they're out, you know, making them, they call them, you know, making them salads, because we have clover that kind of grows in our yard. So they'll pick all the clover and then they feed it to the chickens. Oh. But my daughter, my 6-year-old, is out there in like, cause she's, you know, princess, all into dresses and things. She's in like a tank top dress that's too small for her. So it's really short. It barely even covers her little bum. And she's out there barefoot playing in the water, getting, you know, this clover to feed to her chickens. And as an adult, I am in pants, I am in a hoodie, and I am in my parka because it's 30 degrees outside. And I'm like, Addie Rose, are you not freezing? And she was like, no, I'm fine. And she played for probably an hour in the 30 degree weather in a tank top dress. And she was completely fine. And yeah, if there was moisture and different things like that, I'd be worried about other things. But we, I think, worry about it, you know, far more than they do.
Oh, that makes so much sense. Well, I am going to put your recommendations in the show's description, like getting testing for the vitamin D, cortisol, HSA, female hormone, and that sort of stuff, and the sun and the grounding. If there's anything else on your list and you want to email it to me, I'll include that. This has been great. We're running up on the hour. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that, you know, I this conversation is just, it's eye-opening. I know I'm going to change some things about the way I've been living. And definitely, you know, when I take a look at like, oh, I'll complain that I can't buy organic grapes there, however much, $10. But then like to spend $10 on a bottle of wine that literally is adding probably the toxins to your body and making it harder for your liver, take that money and spend it on the organic. I'm telling myself this. So I'm not yelling at anyone else. I'm telling myself this, like, stop being so, you know, that makes so much more sense and just in how we're supposed to be living. So thank you so much for sharing this amazing story. I just wish you all the best of luck with, you know, your health and just this homeschooling journey that you're on. And I hope you'll come back on too, because I have a feeling people will really like listening to this episode.
Yeah, of course. I would love to. It's been so fun to talk to you. I, you know, like I said, we could talk for like 4 hours on these things, you know, but
yes.
I think the most important thing that I hope, you know, folks take away from this, because I know we've talked about a lot of different things, is just this idea that, you know, connection over curriculum, really connecting with our kids, I think is the most vital, most important thing that we can do. And then the second one being that fear is more toxic than anything else. So to not get overwhelmed with like, you know, well, you know, Emily and Cheryl said I have to buy organic and I can't afford organic. And oh my gosh, fear is far more toxic. You have to just do what works for you. You know, do what works for your family. Look around. I understand I am very privileged with where I live in the state of Utah, because we have farms everywhere. You know, we buy all of our meat, all of our grass-fed meat from a friend's farm that's an hour away from us. You know, we have so many people that grow organic vegetables here that, especially in the summertime, it's cheap for me to be able to access things because we have a lot of farms and access to those things in Utah, where a lot of people don't have that. So it's not about being crazy and falling down the rabbit hole and being scared, because that's not helpful either. It's just about consciously making choices, doing what you can, and eliminating things as you can. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, I've been doing this for many years at this point. And I even every year I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know about, you know, this thing. And so there's always something new, and you just kind of have to figure out what works for your family, what makes sense to you, and kind of live in that way. So, yeah.
Oh, that is such good advice. Emily, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Right. It was so fun to hang out with you.
You too. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you've enjoyed what you heard and you'd like to contribute to the show, please consider leaving a small tip using the link in my show's description. Or, if you'd rather, please use the link in the description to share this podcast with a friend or on your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. Any effort to help us keep the podcast going is greatly appreciated. Thank you for tuning in and for your love of the next generation.